Recording in a secret location deep in the heart of the Smeelosphere, in a world where everyone rocks a stash like Harold. You're listening to C4 on CanucksHockeyBlog.com, the podcast that wishes it had abs like Chris Higgins. Welcome to the October 22nd, 2013 episode of C4 CHB. That's Chris and Clay's Canucks Hockey Commentary from CanucksHockeyBlog.com. As always, I do that every time. I do. It's my shtick. But I am Chris Golden at Light Force, as you might know me on Twitter. As always, joined by Clayton Emo.
Yes, I'm at Canuck Clay on Twitter, and I think I have more breath in my lungs right now than my partner Chris does.
But you don't try to do that all one thing in one breath, one voice. And I actually breathe normally leading up and then wait to get some of the breath out.
It's very impressive. But speaking of impressive, who's with us today, Chris?
I believe we are joined again by producer extraordinaire Matt Lee, who is at Matt Lee 980 on Twitter, right?
That is correct. Thank you for letting me say that myself.
Well, I thought I'd just switch it up.
You know what? On the topic of breathing, though, you should come to yoga. We really work on the breathing techniques and stuff. Really good for on-the-air performance. It's really good for you if you're ever looking to get into radio.
Yeah, but I've always been told that I have a face for radio.
But you have a voice for radio, too. Well, silky.
Silky smooth.
But since the last podcast, we weren't on radio. We were on TV.
Were we on TV between now and the last podcast?
Yeah, that Jill Cropp Unfiltered show.
Unfiltered. All right. I was waiting for you guys to toot your horns here.
Yeah, it's not even in our script, but you knew I was going to get that in there.
Well, I totally forgot, and I thought that was actually before our last podcast, but it was after.
Maybe it was before. It just seems like it was just recently. We haven't talked about it. I know
Oh, man. That's so 2 weeks ago, guys. Let's talk about what you guys did this weekend. How about that?
Well, I was obviously watching some Canucks hockey this weekend, kicking it back at one of my favorite restaurants in Steeston, the Blue Canoe. It was a great game to watch on Saturday. Can't say that the Sunday game was as impressive as Saturday was. Matt, I think you found your way out to lovely Steeston.
Yes, thank you for bringing me out to the Blue Canoe. Had a wonderful time with the girlfriend. Before we talk about any further, I actually have a just crazy story to tell you about fantasy football. Do you guys play fantasy football or fantasy hockey, right?
Fantasy hockey.
Okay, well, football, yeah. I have Colin Kaepernick as my quarterback in my pool.
Okay.
And I decided to use Jay Cutler instead of him because Kaepernick has been struggling lately.
Yeah.
Long and short, Jay Cutler gets injured in the first quarter, misses the rest of the game, and I lose my matchup by the slimmest of margins. Colin Kaepernick, on the other hand, rushes for a touchdown, gets 20 fantasy points, and I lose by 10 fantasy points. If I had just started Colin Kaepernick, I would have won. I lost sleep all night. I just lost all faith in humanity after that.
What happens if you win this pool, Matt?
I don't know. A lot of pride, a couple bucks.
Okay,
just making sure
it was well worth it. That's
okay.
All I'm
what
saying.
About you? What did you go to?
Well, Saturday, thanks for the invite. Couldn't get out to Steeston, although I live in Steeston. I stayed at home with the family, did a bit of work, and then Saturday night, took a couple friends out who are actually moving away. Big Canucks fans. I want to give a shout out to my friend Dave Leeson. He's at Dave Leeson 1 on Twitter, and him and his lovely wife Kathy moving to Iowa.
Iowa,
of all places. So
they have ice in Iowa.
They
right?
do, but I think they're gonna get trapped into the whole college football scene as opposed to any pro hockey out there. So it was, bottom line, it was nice to hang out and to wish him well, and hopefully he'll be tweeting and following Canucks, of course, while he's down there.
And there's nothing wrong with college football; it's a Saturday sport.
Absolutely,
right? He's not getting hockey night in Canada in Iowa.
They'll find a way.
They'll get NBC Sunday afternoon hockey or whatever the heck they call it.
Right. True. Fair enough. But thanks for asking. That was the bulk of my Saturday, and then yes. I sat through the Sunday game, which, admittedly, I don't know if we're going to get to this later. The fans were pretty cool. They made for an actual relatively mundane game. Relatively interesting to watch, I thought. But maybe we're going to get that too.
Yeah, we'll get that later. a little bit later. Yeah. Before we go any further, you wanted to talk about the official Canucks tweet-up that's happening this Friday.
That is right. The official tweet-up from Vancouver Canucks, first one of this season. As always, the Canucks have been, in the last few seasons, getting us out to the Boston Pizzas around the Lower Mainland to celebrate an away game, have some prizes, get some of the Twittosphere, as we like to call it here at CHB, the Smeelosphere together. Normally hosted by the Beat 94.5's Chris Palliser, friend of the blog. We got lots of friends, but he's definitely one. He is busy, so guess who they have hired to fill in as host?
Well, it's got to be someone really good, obviously.
Dale Weiss?
Well, they asked Dale. They truly did, but he's apparently going to play in St. Louis. So they asked someone else.
So someone who's not playing. So Jordan Schrader.
Tum Tum. Well,
no, wait. No, hold on. We're not there yet. Gino.
Whoa. Gino would be good. I remember him showing up at a Canucks tweet up, unknowingly showing up because he went to a local establishment. And you could see the look on his face. At first, I think he enjoyed the attention that he got from all the Canucks fans. But you could see the look on his face, like, what have I just walked into? People are going, Gino, Gino, as he's walking into this bar. He left before the game was over, and I don't think that was intention. But it's not Gino.
Okay, I give up. I don't know about you, Matt.
All right, we know it's Chris.
That is right. Myself, Chris Golden, at Lightforce, will be your host at the official Canucks tweet up this Friday. I believe it's a 5 o'clock puck drop or 5:30. It's at the Boston Pizza on Grandview Highway. If you're not there, I don't know where you are. Maybe it's the BC Lions game. But if you're a Canucks fan, you want to be at that tweet up.
And for people, Chris, who have never been to a tweet up, what can they expect?
Well, I mean, it's really a collection of like-minded Canucks fans talking puck, getting together, having a good time. We have trivia. We give away some prizes. I got no clue what we're giving away, but we've given away things like jerseys, tickets to games, signed merch, what have you. It's just a good time, and it's had by all.
He's going to be giving away hugs, too, I think, while he's at it.
That's why they probably asked him.
Worst prize ever. Rewind.
Really, centers now a shot, they score. The pass was knocked away, but it came right to Chris Higgins, and suddenly he's got the hot hand as Higgins makes it 1-0. Trying to get the puck out, gets it just outside the line where Bieksa takes control. Edler tests for it. Way out, it's behind him, it's in. Alex Edler's just scored from center ice on a shot that hit the goalie in the chest, went over his head and into the net, and it's 1-0. Prisoners riot. Left wing. Plays the puck to the other side. Kessler's after it. He reverses. Here's a chance in front. Higgins, what a save by McElhinney with the right pad. Curtis
McElhinney. All right, the Canucks are 4 games into their 7-game road trip. They started off with wins in Philadelphia and the shutout in Buffalo. Firstly, let's talk about those 2 games. Are those 2 games that they should have won? They did win. Was that expected, Chris?
Definitely. And in fact, when you know, we saw people celebrating how the Canucks handled Philadelphia, handled Buffalo. We have to remember that while maybe we did handle Buffalo, the crossbar is really what kept the Canucks on top. That goal gets scored at that point. That complexion of that game changes. And even the Philadelphia game was not necessarily one that the Canucks truly handled. A win's a win's a win, don't get me wrong. Doesn't matter how pretty they are, how dirty they are, as long as they get the 2 points. But I'm still a little bit apprehensive of what Canucks squad we see. They're still trying to understand what the system is, trying to integrate themselves with into what Torts wants the team to play. And we're still seeing them mess around. I mean, we saw this past weekend Beast Modo. How long are we going to see Kessler with the Sedins? We've also seen the Sedins split up. So
awesome. So we start off with 4 relatively easy points. Then we go into Pittsburgh on Saturday morning. An early start, Matt. What'd you think about that game?
It was a weird game for me, not just with the early start, but for a game that had so many all-stars on paper playing in this game. You had the Sedins on one side, you had Sidney Crosby, James Neal and Chris Letang missed the game with injuries, but you still have Evgeny Malkin. It deserved a lot of hype, but we just didn't see it live up to those sort of expectations. It lacked intensity, and perhaps it's because these guys are Western and Eastern Conference rivals, but for me it lacked intensity, and then it sort of stumbled into overtime and then the shootout for me. So from that standpoint, I was kind of let down in the entertainment factor.
Well, when you say entertainment factor, and this is actually a point that drives me nuts from time to time, I'm okay with the rough stuff in hockey, but you see that fight between Sestito and Engelin, which seemed to break up.
It was staged.
It was staged, and it breaks up some exciting end-to-end hockey. Teams were going at it. It was entertaining, and all of a sudden a stage fight is introduced. For what? It slowed the game down. It changed really the overall
I thought it
pace.
Didn't give either team momentum. Oh, that was the other thing.
I, people call Sestito Tostito, and that was more Cool Ranch. It was the flavor that no one eats and yet somehow still exists. Well, that was the fight. No one actually enjoyed it, and yet it's still there in the game.
Clay, go ahead.
I was just going to say, with that whole Tostito thing, the game was a little chippy.
Oh, God. I'm
wow.
Just, come I can't on. Believe I let you speak over me with that.
Come on.
I don't know about this being Chris and Clay's hockey blog anymore.
Do you look at getting the single point as a small victory for the Canucks? Because this is a Pittsburgh Penguins team who is currently first in the Eastern Conference. Even just getting a point off the Penguins, who were before last night undefeated at home.
Yeah.
It's a small win, is it not?
At the end of Saturday, yes, it is a small win given how well Pittsburgh was playing, the beast of the East, so to speak, and Vancouver not having done well against, you know, a plus 500 team. So yes, looking at that game, 1 point with a chance to win it, no, I think that was a small victory. It only tainted now when you look at what happened after it for me.
Well, and that's the problem. Like, 1 point on from an, you know, an elite team out of the East, I mean, what's the point of a road trip is to get points.
Yeah.
You come home with points and hopefully come home with an over 500 record. So the Canucks were well on their way. And you're right. It's that game on Sunday, which then, what happened here? The Canucks had no zip. You could almost tell they had worked themselves up for Pittsburgh and all of a sudden let themselves down to play Columbus.
Yeah, and you could make the excuse that the Canucks were tired. However, Columbus was in Washington on Saturday afternoon, so technically they actually arrived in Ohio later than the Canucks. You don't often see that on road games. It was a little deflating to follow up such a strong performance against the Penguins with that loss to Columbus. Perhaps the fact that Columbus isn't a Western Conference rival anymore, it sort of diminishes the importance of that game. But nonetheless, you're looking at the first four games of this road trip. The Canucks should have and could have easily been 3-0-1 heading into tonight's game against the Islanders.
Mm-hmm. It's all perspective, right? You look at the first two, yes, as we talked about, Buffalo and Philly, they won. They should have won and they did win. Then you look at Pittsburgh and Columbus on back-to-back days. And if you say, yeah, we would have got 1 or 2 points out of that, you'd expect those to come out of the Columbus game and not the Pittsburgh game.
Exactly.
The fact that it was reversed, the fact that they started off well against Pittsburgh, gave you hopes that the Columbus, even if they got another point out of there, then man, 6 out of 8 points, that's a great start. But you're right, Matt, now it's only 5 out of 8, and who knows what they're going to wind up with.
The one telling thing, and I don't know if it's just a small indication of how the transition is happening under Tortorella, but how many bench miners for too many men are the Canucks going
to
see?
Or puck over the glass.
The Edler puck over the glass. Yeah. It's reminiscent of Sammy Salo getting the same penalty at the other end of the ice.
Yeah.
But back, the too many men, it's really inexcusable, and it's really inexcusable when it's 7 men on the ice and not just 6, which is the normal too many men. Skaters, of course, and then and then over the above 5. When I saw that 7, I didn't know what 2 of those guys were doing. Do you?
Well, it's there seems to be that confusion. Yeah. Like, and I don't know if it's the system, and they're still trying to understand, am I supposed to be in the ice? When am I supposed to go off? Am I supposed to play a longer shift, shorter shift? What is it that coach asks of me? There seems to be that level of confusion. So it's still early. You know, the Canucks as a team and the coach, they're still trying to mesh. I'm not entirely worried, but if this continues long term, it's going to be a shame to see something like that, you know, the bench miners do them in.
Real quick, 4 games left on this trip. At what point does this become a successful road trip? Does it take the 5 wins, or is 4 wins enough to make this a successful road trip?
I say 4 wins. I mean, you come home with over a 500 record. That's a successful road trip.
Clay, you in the same boat?
Yeah, I think, 3 more games or 4 more games?
4 more games. Three more games.
Okay.
That's right.
So of the next 3, you know, I think you want to get at least 3, you know, 3 points, make it 8 out of 14, like Chris just said, over 500. I think 8, you know, 3 points out of the next 3 games would make it successful.
All right. The question is whether the glass is half full or half empty.
Is it possible to change from a glass half empty to a glass half full person?
It's gonna be legend. Wait for it.
Will you being a wise ass?
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
You ask me questions to try to box me into language. Try to use my words, Brooksy.
Well, you might be a cunning linguist, but I'm a master debater.
I went in there in a pretty good mood today, too. So, that was up, didn't you?
I'm John. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry, okay? I'm not gonna apologize. I'm a cocksman.
I guess that's what I'm saying, Brooksy. Get that through your head?
88 miles per hour!
I'm not taking any questions. We sucked from head to toe.
What's wrong with you?
No, what's wrong with you?
No, what's wrong with you? You're projecting.
Drop it.
You drop it. You stop projecting on me.
No, I don't think the Sabres are a hungry team. I thought we stuck. I don't know what to tell you. Did you ask them? Did you ask them any questions? I don't know why I always have to answer these questions.
Dairy! Legendary!
Whoa, like it...
That was awesome.
That was awesome. Like, it's as if we
Thank
are
you.
A professional...
Producer Matt is in the house.
Yeah, this is like a professional radio show here. I mean, and I have to give you some mad props. Very few people catch on some of the references outside of Top Gun. Everyone knows that Light Force goes on about
Top Gun. Oh, I forgot the Top Gun references. I slipped up there.
But you dropped in a little Back to the Future. You know, the fact that you have Doc Brown screaming about how fast you must go. And how fast is it?
88 miles per hour.
That's right. 88 miles per hour. That's what you need
I also was trying to find the 1.21 gigawatts clip.
Yep.
I couldn't find it. I mean, YouTube is a vast place, but it doesn't have everything.
Oh, that's where you got all those clips from.
Yeah.
I thought you had to watch all those movies on your
VHS.
Yeah,
I had to watch all those movies and record it with a handheld.
Wow.
I was trying to find something that matches with you as well. I don't know. I mean, aside from the haiku thing.
Yeah. I do like Coming to America and Naked Gun. Those are my two favorite movies.
Okay. I'll keep
with,
that in mind.
Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall.
Yeah.
Coming to America.
You got
and
it.
And Naked Gun obviously has...
what's his name?
Leslie Nielsen.
Leslie Nielsen, thank you. I was going to say that you are into the wrestling. So we could maybe play a little
Ricky Steamboat?
Oh, there we go. I was thinking Yokozuna, but... Yeah.
Yokozuna. I'm looking at the three of us. We could be the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be.
That is true.
Thank you.
That is true.
Speaking of the best there is, the best there was, what we've seen is the best from the Sedin twins as of late, or at least Henrik Sedin. Paired with Ryan Kesler, we've seen, like you said, Beast Moto. Is it here to stay?
No. As much as I'd like to think that it's here to stay, it's not.
It's a pretty utter and flat no there.
Look, we've seen, not to say that it's to the AV level of throwing the line combinations into the blender, pulling out the one who goes with the pairs. I think Tortorella is still trying to find the chemistry amongst his team. He understands with the Sedins, whomever you put with them produces. This is more an exploration of how do we find secondary scoring. And we've started to see that on this road trip. We've seen points from Higgins. Kesler.
Higgins and Kessler both had two goals and an assist in the first games of this road trip.
So it's starting to get that production.
Yep.
And JJ wrote a post on the blog just last week on how, you know, and it's, I think, obvious to anyone, how do you beat the Canucks? You shut down the Sedins. Shut down the Sedins, and you play the odds that the secondary scoring is non-existent.
I think it's also speaking to the absence of Alex Burrows. You know, we don't know when he's coming back.
Yep.
And I know we're going to talk about secondary scoring in a little bit, but I think that's a big piece that's being overlooked is when, as soon as he's out of the lineup, everyone kind of shifts up the card, so to speak, and some of those guys simply aren't ready for it. So where he comes back, where he fits in when he comes back, I should say, remains to be seen. But I think we're starting to see his absence. When we talk about lack of scoring, he's a big part. You know, he's a 20, 25, 30 goal man sometimes.
He is, but I mean, that's with the Sedins.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is no reason why Kesler doesn't get points with the Sedins. There's no reason that Santarelli doesn't get points playing with the Sedins. And I'm not trying to take anything away from Burrows. He's a great player. But he's a player that seems to play to the role that he's assigned.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at another player like Hansen, who, when he does play to the role he's assigned, does well. It just seems that with Hansen, he plays to the role he thinks he's supposed to, as opposed to the one he should be.
Yep, don't disagree. I guess my more to the point, though, that I think with him out of the lineup, it just weakens up that much. And Tortorella, you're right, is looking for a line combo that will spark the offense for sure.
Worth noting while we're talking about Henrik Sedin, tied for second in league scoring. He's tied with Sidney Crosby and Joe Thornton for the league lead in assists. Has points in all but one game. Henrik Sedin, is he back to being a 90-point guy, or is this just a pretty good hot streak?
I don't think it's being back to being a 90-point guy. I think he's always had it. It's just that, I mean, Hank is the more complete Sedin.
Ouch.
And I'm not this is not a shot on Daniel,
who, by the way, has just one assist on this road trip.
Well, but if you look at Daniel, Daniel's the goal scorer.
Yep.
Of the two, Daniel's the goal scorer. It frustrates us to no end when Hank, with a wide open net, is still looking for the pass.
Yep.
However, you take Daniel out of the picture, and what does Hank then start to do? He shoots.
Yep.
split the Sedins up. Hank starts to generate. That's where I think there's some genius in what Tortorella is doing and splitting them up. I don't like the Sedins split up long term, because to me you're losing a lot of the creativity they have together. But it does force Hank to actually start to shoot when he should. It starts getting him those goals that he could probably score more frequently that he seems to opt out of.
The other thing is, you think of a typical game, you often, at least I hear the name of Henrik more than I hear Daniel. Maybe because he's a center, so he carries the puck a lot. You know, he's making those great passes to himself off the base of the net. You know, he's very creative. He just has the puck a lot more, whereas Daniel, as a winger, naturally receives it, shoots it, lets it fly, whatever it may be. So I just think that Henrik is, whether or not he's the more complete player, right now he's certainly the more prominent player. The points bear that out. And I just think he has the ability to make players that play with him better. He has a better opportunity to do so than Daniel would playing on the wing, or who's susceptible to who his center is.
Well, and that's the thing. Daniel requires a setup guy. And you look at a player, let's say you put Daniel with Ryan Kessler. Ryan is the center. Ryan is the type of guy who wants the puck.
Yeah, he wants to be the trigger guy too.
Exactly. Yeah. And you put two on the same line, who's setting those two up? West Coast Express, historically. Why did Brendan Morrison have as much success in that line? Because
he was the setup guy.
Setup guy. Yep. Understood his role. As soon as you take that away, he wasn't the guy who was going to get those points.
It's like putting a square peg in a round hole. Is essentially it when you put a line like Daniel Sedin with Ryan Kessler. So you don't think the Sedin should be broken up?
Not permanently.
Do you agree that it gives them some sort of spark?
It gives the Sedins a spark. It gives the team a spark. It's just that long-term, you're sacrificing that creativity. To me, this is no different than you making that goaltender change after, you know, two quick goals. It's about trying to change the momentum and the design of the play. One thing we know that the Canucks will always have the opportunity to, though, is have the Sedins on the power play. And, you know, we'll see those two together. It's even penalty kill to that effect.
Speaking of the power play, ranked 27th in the league right now, ahead of only Anaheim, Philadelphia, and Buffalo. The latter two we talked about already. Horrendous teams already. Power play unit 1, featuring Ryan Kessler, the Sedins, Edler, and Garrison. Really no surprises there. Why is it that this power play continues to struggle in the NHL?
It's crazy. Didn't they score a power play goal in their very first game of the season this year? The goal in San Jose?
That's right.
Okay.
Garrison on the power play.
Basically snuck in from the point and just let it rip, right?
Yeah. I think it was just more the fact that Garrison was on the power play and people like flipped their lid. Oh my God, the Canucks are going to score power play goals on every power play because Garrison's going to kill people.
Intuitively, you have all the pieces there for a good power play. You have Henrik, who's creative, who can pass. You have Kessler, who's not afraid to take a beating in front of the net. You have two hard shots in Garrison and Edler. And you have Daniel, who's just as good shooter from the side. Intuitively, it should work. I've heard Tortorella talk about them being too fancy, trying to set up maybe too nicely, maybe too many crossing passes.
Well, it almost seems like they're working for the perfect pass,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, they should just get it to the back. Let those two guys load up. Garrison can injure two or three guys a game if he wanted to. Not that he wants to.
Yeah, but that's the point. Like, you look at some of the most successful power play in the league historically, it's where you got a player on the blue line unleashing bombs.
MacInnis.
Yeah. I mean, Ally Afraidy. I mean, you can go back.
That's a good last name. I'd be Afraidy to stand in front of him with a slap shot. Come on.
Yeah. Okay. Very funny.
But
Steven Stamkos, another example.
Yeah. I mean, you get the puck to the point, you let a guy unleash a bomb, it actually starts to interfere with the actual penalty kill itself. No player is really wanting to get in front of Garrison's shot multiple times. They're going to play a little bit softer. It's going to open up the ice. I look at a team like San Jose, and what we saw this actually in the postseason last year with their power play, they move the puck quickly. They're constantly moving the puck. It's harder for a penalty kill to keep up. Whereas I find the Canucks, they're looking for that perfect class and that perfect setup, it's very deliberate. It's very slow.
Yeah.
And that lack of speed is a problem.
And to your point on them being slow on the power play, that also allows the penalty killing team, whoever it may be, to get into position to either get into the passing lanes or block shots. So that's the other reason why perhaps they're not clicking as much as they should be. You mentioned the San Jose Sharks are feeding off of a faster power play. That creates more opportunities because you get guys out of position and you're opening up more lanes and shooting lanes for teams to get scored on. So
I have noticed, though, they have been able to gain the zone at least more easier than last year, you know, less of the back passes.
Well, we haven't seen that very much of that.
We have seen it from one player.
Alex Edler?
Alex Edler. And the only reason we didn't see that occur is that he was sitting out for three games.
Fair enough. Yeah.
But that's, and I that last year, that was the only way the Canucks came in on a power play, was the drop pass. Or, well, that didn't work the first three times. Let's slap it in and chase.
Yeah. Okay, so if I'm reading this right, the ways to fix this power play is to either A, give Garrison the puck a little bit more, or B, move speed up the puck movement when they're on the offensive zone.
Or a combination of both.
I think combination of both. Yeah. And it's not just Garrison. Yeah, sure, Garrison and even Edler have those powerful slap shots. So we are seeing Hanhuis and BX out on the power play. Maybe the slap shot isn't as powerful from those two. But this most successful power play, in my opinion, are the ones where you have the defenseman unleashing fury from the blue line and getting traffic in front of the net. And the only way that you're going to be able to succeed is by using speed to confound the penalty kill.
We've talked a little bit about Ryan Kessler and Chris Higgins chipping in with some more production lately. Are you guys feeling a little bit more optimistic about how they're going to do in this latter stretch of the road trip?
Higgins is definitely more noticeable. Mm-hmm. You notice that it would be nice if he popped that goal against Columbus in the final minute there. But he just, you know, he scored a couple, two in the last three games, and he just, you can just see him. He's always been good on the boards. He's always been good fighting for those loose pucks. But now he's getting to places where he can shoot and have more success, hopefully even more success with his shooting. So I think Higgins is coming around and his work ethic is paying off.
Your thoughts on Ryan Kessler, Chris?
I think Kessler's slowly starting to become the player we expected him to be this season. He, let's be honest, hasn't played healthy, serious hockey for some time. Probably not since the 2011 run. And we continue, I think, as a fan base to put these expectations. And in fairness, some of that has to go on him because of him setting expectations personally. Well, we hear this all the time. When a player is trying harder, you hear the cliche of they're gripping their stick a little too hard. They're trying to do everything too perfect, and therefore it doesn't come naturally. Well, it seems now that he's starting to do things a little more naturally. He's playing to that role. I was talking to someone actually at work saying how Ryan Kessler is really, if I think, better off being a third-line player on the Canucks to almost loosen him up and then let him become that second-line center or first-line center. But right now we want him to be that top-line guy, and when he's not, he gets ragged on from all corners.
Let's keep moving down the depth chart here. Brad Richardson picking up his third goal of the year against Pittsburgh, and shockingly was not a shorthanded marker. Have expectations changed for Brad Richardson at all? 15 goals maybe being realistic here. We've all been impressed with his play thus far as both a penalty killer and as a faceoff guy. He's doing a good job on that third line. Is he a guy who has replaced Manny Malhotra pretty adequately here?
Oh, I think so. I remember at the season ticket holder summit this past summer, Mike Gillis had said that Richardson, or at least the team's leadership, felt this was another Manny Malhotra discovery. Where when Malhotra joined the Canucks, everyone understood the guy was a killer in the faceoff dot. And then all of a sudden contributed quite well up until his unfortunate eye injury. Well, Richardson seems to be acquitting himself quite well as a fourth-line center. He's able to provide us sort of that consistency and leadership. I mean, the guy, you know, played with the Kings during their Stanley Cup run. He's able to bring that, which I think the Canucks have traditional act. I'm happy with where he's at. In fact, I'd say he's meeting expectations. If he gets 15 goals, that's almost a bonus.
Let's get to Clay's favorite player.
Oh, would that be Roberto Luongo?
No, that would be David Booth, Clay. just 2 assists in the 7 games since he scored that first goal against Calgary. Only 10 minutes of ice against Columbus. The $4.25 million price tag, it hangs over his head like a gigantic weight. And I'm going to bring up a comment from Tony G of the Province this morning. David Booth is a fourth-line player being paid top-line dollars. He's just there for the ride. Your thoughts, Clay?
Strong words from Tony G. I actually was sitting watching, they had a nice feature on David Booth on SportsCenter yesterday.
And you probably ate it up.
Well, it was interesting. And David Booth, one thing that really stuck out to me is he acknowledged how taxing the mental part of the game is. And yeah, we can all argue, I mean, we can all agree, I think, that he definitely has the physical tools. We hear stories about his fitness. We see that he's a very strong skater. But, you know, I watch the games on the weekend, and right now, he's not shooting well, he's not passing well, he's not receiving pass well. once in a while, you know, he's not afraid to get physical. He's not afraid to do a body check, or he does some good poke checks sometimes, but he simply is not being effective. And yes, I will admit that for $4.5 million, we need to see much more. And I was hoping, I've said on this podcast, that he could be an X factor. You know, imagine 20 goals from him. Imagine 40 to 45 points from him. But yeah, he's not on pace for that at all. And convictions aside, I just want him to do well, because I think he has it in him. For whatever reason, it just hasn't clicked.
Hypothetical question here. If David Booth made $1.5 to $2.5 million a year, would we see better production from him? Like, you talked about the mental aspect of the game and how challenging that can be. If he doesn't have the weight of a $4 million a year contract on his shoulders, does he improve his point production a little bit more?
That's a great question. I'm going to take the easy way out from a standpoint of, obviously, I'll never be paid that much in my life, so I don't know what that pressure's like. I would say, though, with any professional athlete, the pride itself should be enough to keep you going. And whether
It should.
Whether you're making $4 million or $1.5 million, I think he's putting enough pressure on himself. I would hope he is, that he's going to do well regardless of how much, you know, he's making. But that's a really, really good question.
Chris, time to temper expectations on David Booth. Is he just a third, fourth line guy now? Or does he still have it?
I think he has it. But has he been put in that position since, was it 2 years ago? We had the American Express line, him, Kessler, and Higgins. Yeah. And they were producing until, I think it was Kyle Porter, knee on knee, took him out. And he's not been the same player. I think it was just he was in a great situation. That got taken away, and he just hasn't been able to find his place. Again, expectations being through the roof. We have this guy, he makes this much money, he needs to do this. It's almost an expectation of our market. You play to the dollars you earn. And fairly or unfairly, sometimes those expectations are not achievable. That said, I mean, has he been put in a situation that he can produce? No, yes. I mean, look, his line mates are constantly changing, and he hasn't been healthy.
And I think that's the catch-22, is right now he's playing with Richardson and Cassian. Was that his line mates for the last...
I believe Cassian was on.
Yeah. So, you know, even though we just talked about Richardson having a good start to the season, and Cassian's had very uneven play, those aren't guys that are going to light up the lamp, so to speak. So he hasn't got a chance to play on the second line. Maybe one would argue he hasn't earned it. So that's
getting some power play time, too.
Barely. Unit. Yeah, the end of the second unit, I think.
And the way the first unit power play works is that's a minute 30 seconds.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I'm just saying he's getting some power play.
Fair enough.
I'd be curious. Put David Booth with the Sedins.
We've talked about this before, and I think they've tried that. It's just, it still hasn't clicked. I mean, maybe they give it a longer look, but for me, I think that ship has sort of sailed already.
Last thing on Booth, though, he mentioned in that Sportsnet interview that one thing he prides himself in, what he likes to do, is he loves to get to the net, creating contact, initiating havoc in front of the net, and he hasn't done that enough yet. You know, I see signs of Mason Raymond, unfortunately, or fortunately. He comes down the wing, lets a weak shot go, and then kind of just sees what happens.
Do you think that there's some hesitation for him to go to the net because of his previous injuries as well?
That's tough to say.
We've seen that before with players. They've gotten injured, whether it be knees or upper body or what have you, and after those injuries, after the long return from those injuries, they have a little bit more reservation about going to the dirty areas because they're afraid of hurting themselves again. So maybe that could apply in this case.
Well, I mean, if he continues to play that way, I mean, it begs the question, when Alex Burrows returns, is Booth the odd man out?
It very well could be. Someone who we look at in a completely opposite light of David Booth, Mike Santarelli, just because of what he gets paid, which is $550,000. He's on a two-way deal, I believe, UFA after this year. He's just got 2 assists in the last 5 games, but realistically, is Santarelli a guy who can be a top-six guy? And should we change expectations that we had from him at the start of the year?
Well, it's funny, we're talking about David Booth, and now we're talking about Santarelli. You know, both had their most productive years playing together. Santarelli is playing well above expectations. We have to be realistic. The guy's going to eventually cool off.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not a knock against Santarelli. This is a kid who played his way onto the team. He was given a two-way contract with really the expectation that he was depth in Utica. He makes it difficult, and as he continues to play well, continues to make it difficult on the team to actually not, one, ice him, but two, send him to Utica, and it's creating some, you know, depth issues, which is great, because our depth issues have been that we didn't have it, and now we actually have too much.
We got to move this along here. We only got a couple minutes. But real quick, Jason Garrison, we've talked to him about a little bit more. He's up to 9 points in 10 games. Obviously not sustainable, a 70-point pace. But Christian Harrow was the last Canuck to put up 50 points in 1 year. Can Garrison break 50?
I think he can. I don't know if he will, but I definitely think he has it in him, especially if he does the things that we've been talking about. If he continues to get first power play unit time, and if he continues to make people scared of his shot, I think he can easily, not easily, I think he can get to 50 points for the season, and it'd be great if he did, because it's been a while. Like, it's been a few years since we've had someone with that production on the D.
I'm taking a firmer line. He's going to get 50 points.
On the dot?
Bob, he's going to get 50 or more.
It's tough to say. I mean, it's not like he's can afford to take a hit right now, but he would have to be consistently productive. But, and I'm not sure if he can do that.
Well, he's being put into every opportunity to be.
Yes,
and that's
absolutely.
The thing. He's on the first power play.
Sometimes he gets both power play units.
And that's he's been given the opportunity to succeed.
All right. Real quick, what to do with Alex Burrows when he returns? Is he back with the Sedins?
To me, you don't actually necessarily need to put him with the Sedins. I'm a little more curious on what they do with the rest of the lineup. I think Burrows comes on the second line.
I think he does go with the Sedins because I don't think they're sold on Cassian being with the Sedins yet. I would put Burrows up there. I would put Higgins, Kessler, and Booth back together as my second line.
Eric Express.
And that leaves you Santarelli, Hansen, and Cassian on their third, I guess.
So looking towards tonight, we got the New York Islanders facing the Canucks in, I guess it's no longer Nassau Coliseum. They're playing in Brooklyn?
Is that right? Are they playing in Brooklyn now? I thought that was next year.
Maybe next year. Okay.
I think the lease runs out like in a year or 2 years from now.
All right. Well, I mean, how often did we actually have a chance to say that the Canucks were playing out east? Obviously not last season. But what do we see from the Isles? Well, one, we got Tavares, who's leading the Isles in scoring right now. He's got 4 goals, 6 assists, 10 points in 8 games. Tavares is obviously showing it. He's now developing into a far better player. No Michael Grabner, though. Grabs is out for 2 games for a hit that he laid on Carolina's Nathan Gerbe. And it begs the question, though. I mean, hit aside, is let's discuss the Isles have seen. You know, are they going to be a playoff team again? I mean, it's so often that we've been giving them the boots for being the Isles, but they're currently third in the Metropolitan Division.
I'm buying it.
Yeah?
I'll buy it. Even with some, I would say, questionable goaltending with Evgeny Nabokov, just having John Tavares as your captain, your leader, in addition to having a growing core that's getting a little bit older and a little bit more experienced, I'm buying the hype.
So is that the benefit of Garth Snow's leadership?
You know, people undersell Garth Snow as a general manager. I think he's made actually quite a few shrewd moves as a general manager. You know, you look at what they're doing in Edmonton and you look at what they're doing on the New York Islanders. And I like what the New York Islanders have done with their team. They've slowly built themselves a winner, and they haven't had to finish last consistently to do it, unlike the Edmonton Oilers. So that's why I'm buying the hype for the New York Islanders.
Okay. Well, what are we calling tonight's game, Clay?
You mean a prediction?
Yeah, prediction.
Oh, easy. Canucks win 4-2.
Canucks win 4-2. That's so on the edge for you. Matt?
You go first.
Well, I actually look at this as a Canucks win, and the only reason I give the Canucks the edge is because of the stinker we saw in Columbus. I feel the Canucks are going to win this game 2-1.
Yeah, I'll say 3-2 Canucks.
Okay, very optimistic, very good. 2 days later, the Canucks travel to New Jersey for a rematch of that October 8th game where the Canucks beat the New Jersey Devils at home, wrecking Corey Schneider's return to Vancouver. So a couple of interesting things here. New Jersey has finally won. Is it one game now?
Yeah,
or
they
two?
Got a game.
So they shut out AV's Rangers.
Woo!
Corey Schneider got a shutout.
Well, that's because Luongo.
Sweet revenge.
There you go. So what's going to happen? Firstly, who's going to play in net for the Devils?
Schneider had his chance.
And he quitted himself well against the Canucks. I actually think it's Schneider. I mean, I understand that people are saying it might be Martin Brodeau, but I think you give Schneider the shot at now home facing his old team.
I am a dramatic guy. I think this is the last time we ever see Martin Brodeau play against the Vancouver Canucks, so I'll say Brodeau gets the start.
Well, I'm going to break the tie by going with Schneider. I think they're gonna count on a big game from him at home, want to do well against his former team.
Yeah, I see it. I'm just a flair for the dramatic. I think Broder gets the start. They'll finish it off quickly because they got a quick turnaround on Friday, the very next night, against the Blues. That's, for me, the premier game in the NHL schedule for this upcoming week. A very good test for the Canucks on their last game of this huge road trip. Blues led by Alex Steen, David Backes in scoring. It's the first time we get to see Derek Roy in a Blues uniform. Your quick thoughts on his very brief tenure with the Canucks. Where does he rank in terms of trade deadline acquisitions in recent memory? Is he in the Eric Weinrich territory?
That's actually who I was going to compare him to, is Eric Weinrich. I don't recall that Derek Roy played for the Canucks last year.
He just was so invisible.
And it's so disappointing because they even made that nice video on Canucks.com showing how they made the trade call.
Yeah, that was really cool.
And when you looked at him on paper, you said, man, this could be the tonic to our secondary scoring. And absolutely nothing.
But looking back at it, hindsight being 2020, it really made no sense for that move. They acquired another center to back up Ryan Kessler as their third line center. And I guess it just didn't really make sense for me. The logical solution would have been to acquire a scoring winger, because David Booth sure wasn't cutting it. But I digress. We also won't see Max Lapierre for St. Louis, still suspended for that hit on Dan Boyle. Who's been the better center for the Vancouver Canucks, Brad Richardson or Max Lapierre?
Well, we're going to look at the small microcosm that is Brad Richardson.
Yeah. Like, I know it's 10 games in.
And I actually prefer what Richardson brings to the Canucks. I wasn't a big fan of Lapierre. That's more personal. Yeah, it's just I don't like the, I don't know how to best describe it, but the yappy players. To me, you back your play up, or you back yourself up on the ice with your play, not necessarily your mouth. But with the Canucks as they are designed, I think they have the agitators, and that Lapierre was just something more than they needed. So I'm a fan of Richardson. The thing to keep in mind, though, is that the Canucks are finally back home after that 7-game road trip, facing the Alexander Ovechkin and Washington Capitals regime. And I call it a regime because Alex Ovechkin's there, and, you know, he does want to go back to another Russia at some point. Capitals coming back to Vancouver because it's been quite some time. We saw them visit back in October 2011.
Remember this game, to be honest.
Well, it was a shootout in the Wild West, 7-4 for Vancouver. I mean, when was the last time you saw a score that big? Two goals were from Ovechkin and the aforementioned Maxime Lapierre. I mean, when you have 11 goals scored both ways, there's going to be some multiple goal scorers. What do we like about this game?
The entertainment factor. I mean, it's the equivalent of Sidney Crosby coming to Vancouver. For us, we get to see Alex Ovechkin as a Washington Capital in Vancouver for the first time in a couple years. And it's a hot ticket.
So, is this the last time we see Alex Ovechkin
in
Vancouver?
No, I'm not buying the hype that he's not going to be back here. He'll be back. And he'll be a Capital for a while, in my mind. This isn't an Ilya Kovalchuk situation, in my money. In my mind. I said mine, not money.
Well, not to say that I'm a conspiracy theorist. We've heard that Ovi has said numerous times that, you know, he wanted to play in the Olympics. He does like what he sees, back home. I don't fault the guy. And it almost seems to me that his play is somewhat at times uninspired. And part of me wonders if maybe there's some joy that he would achieve in playing with Russia in the Olympics that might motivate him to play with some of those players who are already playing in the KHL.
Definitely think there's going to be a nice little buzz in the crowd at Rogers Arena that night. You always get that whenever there's a team that hasn't been here for a while, or especially a superstar player, Matt, as you mentioned, like Sidney Crosby. You know, Washington, maybe not as sexy as a team as Pittsburgh. You know, you look at their roster, Backstrom's good, Mike Green's good, but after that, there isn't a lot of firepower or star power there, but Ovechkin more than makes up for it. I guess one other little side note is, don't forget that Braden Holtby was considered the fifth of the five goalies.
Oh, yes, a potential Team Canada matchup.
So we have another Luongo versus another person vying for that job game.
Well, if this goes just as horribly as the last time Luongo was up against a Team Canada potential opponent, it could be pretty bad for Luongo. Of course, I'm talking about the Carey Price thing, where Carey Price stood on his head. Holby's not on my radar. I've talked about that before, but you guys might see differently.
I don't know. I've been reading online and that really the Olympic goaltenders are Reimer and Bernier. Or did I get something wrong there?
The Bernier for sure.
Yeah.
I thought Bernier was an early contender for the Vezina. And the Conn Smythe.
Yeah, well, they're definitely going to win the Jennings. Time for what is by far my most favorite segment here on CHB, and that is Ask CHB, where we reach out to our readers, that is you, asking you to ask us questions so we can provide you critical analysis and some of the toughest answers you'll ever hear. And tonight is no different. We have one of our favorite people, friend of the blog, TGAT favorite, Elmi Batarina, and that is Elmi at Elmi Batarina on Twitter. And she asks us this very simple question, and we've touched on it earlier. Which is better, number one on the penalty kill, or whatever number we are on the power play? Matt.
Number one on the penalty kill.
Penalty kill. Clay.
Penalty kill, absolutely.
And I agree. We maybe do this often, but to me, if the Canucks are scoring goals, whether they're on the power play or not, it doesn't matter. It's when you're on the penalty kill and being able to shut down the team's offensive weapons on the power play.
Yeah, I mean, you're more likely to kill a penalty than you are a power play, so you got to at least have one going for you. And for us, being able to shut down a team's power play is probably more important at this point than trying to connect once or twice on any given night on the power play.
Why do you think our penalty kill is better this year, Matt?
It could be just a change in the system with John Tortorella in terms of blocking shots. I know John Tortorella was praising Chris Tanev in particular, actually, for being able to pick up things that he wanted to impose on the Canucks. And I am talking about the shot blocking process. I mean, you've seen Chris Tanev block some shots a little bit awkwardly, but he gets it done, and he gets it done pretty effectively. So for the Canucks, being able to kill penalties as regularly as they have is a pretty positive thing, considering how lackluster the special teams have been.
Yeah. And a couple other people I want to recognize on Twitter, because AskCHB, it's always about the fans. First of all, we have Shoe Thief, which I don't believe is his or her real name, but it does appear that it might be a dog that's tweeting us. At Stuck on the Sofa on Twitter says, cool, a Canucks podcast, off to iTunes. And I think it's important to note out, we are still in the new and noteworthy section on iTunes under Professional Sports Podcasts.
Yeah, if you're not downloading our podcast, it should be on the iTunes app on your iPhone. You can subscribe to us via the new and noteworthy section. And do it for Clay. He needs to feed his kids.
That's right. And speaking of Clay feeding his kids, we have a recent addition to Twitter. One of the billions of users.
But glad we talked about this.
This is one that I think is very important for all of you as CHB fans, all of us already following. But Sean Emo, who is the son of Clay and probably far more talented than his father.
I agree.
Sean is now on Twitter, and you all can follow him. He is at @Canuck_Sean. The kid's witty. I'm just going to throw it out
there. Yeah, his first tweet basically said, hello, Twitter, expect analysis better than my dad's.
Oh, yes.
No, tweets that are better than my dad's, analysis better than Gary Volk's.
Well, that's good.
He came up with that himself, too.
That's pretty good.
And in fact, no bias here. He got into TGAT 3 times on his first day on Twitter.
And there was no bias whatsoever.
None.
Liz runs a very tight ship. And I mean, I don't get into TGAT very often. And your kid, he 3 times in his first day on Twitter.
I told him not to get used to it, though.
Well, you know what? Don't even bother showing up to the next podcast, Clive. We'll just get Sean to come in.
Okay, we will bring Sean to our next podcast as long as we record at a decent time.
Yeah.
And maybe some other guests, too.
Yeah.
But the other aspect of reaching out to our fans, Clay, I think you've got a few things for us here.
I do. It is time for what we like to call CHB Haiku.
Garth, that was a haiku.
Again, we all know haiku, 17 syllables in the form of 5-7-5. Sometimes the 12 should go first together, and the 5 is kind of like a concluding statement. I got 3 for you. 2 from the viewers or listeners or tweeters, and 1 that I made just for you guys. You guys ready? Here we go. I want a reaction to each. Firstly, at Queen of Stout, Kate Ellison says, they said, no, not Torts. He'll be Keenan 2.0. Looks like they were wrong. Chris.
Wow, that is some epic haiku. I mean, it tells the story It communicates effectively. It talks about he who shall not be named. So I have to do a couple dash points there. But I like it.
Good. And, I'm really glad I said 2.0 and not 2.0 because that would have been 18 syllables.
That's illegal.
Okay. Matt, this one's for you. Here we go. This is, this is funny. This is Elmi Batarina's husband, Jay, another friend of the blog. He's at Rozzy80. This is Jay. And he says, blonde-haired David Booth. Quiet and invisible, much like hunting deer. Matt, instant reaction.
Oh, that's good. It's good.
Isn't that clever?
He is invisible. He's the invisible man. The $4 million invisible man.
The haiku?
Killer.
Hunting deer.
Awesome. And then actually, this was his second submission. Originally, he did one that wasn't so good. And I said, what's wrong with the first one? He goes, he realized that the original wasn't in haiku form. It was written more like a men's cologne commercial. Just a side thing.
Gotcha.
And here's my third one. My contribution to the show. Here it is. Are you guys ready? Thank you. Tweet Up on Friday. Hosted by our own Light Force. It's Chris number 2.
Ouch.
Yeah, but let's be fair here. Yes, Tweet Up on Friday. Just want to remember everyone.
Chris number 2, yes, on Friday.
Chris number 2 on Friday. Well, Chris Palliser. I love the guy. He is a friend of the blog, friend of the podcast, friend of CHB TV. He's just a good all-around guy. He's double booked. He's got a couple part-time jobs. His full-time job now is being a father. But one of his part-time gigs has him away. And I have to be honest, when people hear that it's Chris hosting, but not Chris Palliser of the Beat 94.5, they don't seem to be as excited when I'm there.
I'm excited.
And I appreciate
that. I'll be there, but Clay won't, apparently.
Other engagements, speaking of part-time jobs. But yes, Chris, I know you'll do well. So send in your haikus anytime, but mostly on the day that we record these podcasts, because I'll probably lose them in the other 2 weeks. So always a hashtag at CHB Haiku, and we always love to listen and read and receive your haikus.
Awesome. Well, the last thing I just want to share, and this is something I think you guys will be excited about, and many of you in the Smealosphere are excited, is that CHB, we decided it was about time we added some new blood to our blog. And so we asked you, hey, are you interested in writing for CHB? And I'll be honest, guys, we had close to 70 applications.
Whoa.
Wow.
And that one blew my mind, that there were that many people that wanted to write for us. Now one of them went by the name JJ Guerrero. That one threw me off. I don't know if we know him or not.
It sounds kind of familiar.
Yeah, but I haven't seen, any of this guy's content recently.
We should see if that guy can write.
But on a serious note, we had so many applications, it was tough. So what we've done is we've actually gone through and we've created a little short list of some of the ideas that people have shared, and we've reached out to many of those people. Emails were sent out this past weekend, and if you were one of those people that were wanting to write for us and you didn't get that email, I'm sorry, we didn't have the means to bring 70 people on board this time around, but that doesn't necessarily mean we don't want you to participate and involve yourself. I mean, we're going to continue to look to grow. I mean, this JJ Guerrero guy might not work out. So the idea...
I hope he doesn't work out.
The idea we have is that we want to grow our blog. So if you have an idea and you think it will fit within, CHB as our brand, let us know. Reach out to us. You can find us everywhere. We are online at CanucksHockeyBlog.com. You can reach out to us on Twitter, at CanucksHockey. Facebook, which is Facebook.com/CanucksHockey. In fact, we have an email address, chb@CanucksHockeyBlog.com.
Yeah, I just discovered that.
We have an email address?
Yeah, apparently we have an email
address. Who checks
it? I don't know. I guess Chris does.
Okay. I hired an intern. His name's JJ Guerrero. Yeah, you can't see this right now, but I believe these gentlemen will eventually pick themselves off the floor after laughing their asses off. But I think that's it, guys. Any final words?
Nope. Like you said, we're on Facebook, Twitter, all that crap.
Yes. All that crap. See you later, guys. And that's it for another episode of C4 from CHB. On behalf of CanucksHockeyBlog.com, I am Chris Golden signing off. Please leave us great feedback wherever you go, iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook.
state of notice.
Oh, my God.
Good luck keeping up with us, amateurs.